Chapter 27. Angels of Death. Angron freed. First on the wall. The nightfall. Terran orbit, 15th of Quartus. A single note sang through Horus's fleet, calling all to action. Upon the nightfall, it was greeted gladly.
That's it! That's the signal! All engines full ahead!
Bellowed Terra Master Thandamel, wild with excitement. All mutual respect between the Legion and its servants was gone aboard the Nightfall. The bond had been failing for a long time, a process of erosion quickened since Scryvok had installed himself and come thence to collapse. It was not so on every ship, but under the Painted Count's overlordship, the crew were reduced to chattels. The slave masters moved among the thralls, laying their scourges across the backs of those deemed to be performing their duties too slowly. No Night Lord would lower himself to the tedious administration of day-to-day discipline. Every overseer was drawn from the thrall stock of the ship. All were desperate men and sadists. Their eagerness to perform their duties exhilarated Scryvok. He had never been a gentleman, but his character was changing under the influence of the sword, becoming more wanton in his cruelty. Quickly enough that he could see it himself, invigorating enough that he did not care.
Thandamel, Scryvok crowed from the shipmaster's dais. What glories await us! What fine adventures we set ourselves upon! When the bards compose their sonnets of this war, come victory or defeat, the name of Gendor Scryvok will be remembered. And that is very fine. When the chroniclers of the future ask where Conrad Kurz was at the moment the first assault crashed against the walls and find no answer, they will know that I, the Painted Count, was there in his stead. As Kurz blunders his way across the cosmos whining for his father, it is I who bring the sons of the sunless world to glory, for power, for plunder, and for pain. Onwards, sons of the night! Onwards to victory!
Thandamel grinned savagely.
What a lovely speech, he said. Are you all done now?
Of course, Thandamel.
Scryvok gripped the hilt of his sheathed sword and gestured to a slave to bring him his helm.
If you would be so good as to release the Primarch, I have a ship aboard. Order the raptors to depart immediately. Take the enemy by surprise. Clear a safe zone. I wouldn't want my crowning achievement to be spoiled by my death.
How do we get him out? Said Thandamel.
Scryvok, on his way to the nearest lifter, stopped.
Who? Terra Master.
Angron. How do we get him off the ship?
Scryvok waved a hand around dismissively.
I shall let you decide on that. I've other prey to hunt.
The Nightfall shuddered from stem to stern with the push of its engines. Terra's tortured orb swelled. Klaxons alerted all aboard to imminent planetfall. On decks below, warriors readied themselves for the drop.
You, Surf, Thandamel barked. Prepare to cut power to the labyrinth.
Angron blundered from a smoking chamber. Delicate crystalline pain engines lay broken on the ground. The demon Primarch panted with effort, his red skin crossed with a thousand welts. The pain engines could keep a normal man occupied with an eternity of torments. Yet another trap in Perturabo's maze. Under Angron's fury, they had lasted 4 minutes. Behind him stretched a trail of destruction through the intricate workings, a road of smashed priceless technologies, caved-in walls, ruptured conduits, and broken machinery. The next room came alive, a labyrinth of screaming faces trapped in mirrors, all pleading to be saved, all in peril, shouting endlessly. There was perhaps a way through. Once, Angron had possessed a mind sharp enough to best the challenge by intellect alone. Now, he did not need to think. Brute force served him better. His wings were tattered, one eye blinded. Lasburns, radburns, cuts, and bullet holes covered him. The labyrinth had tested him, but it could never, ever stop him. Angron heaved in a wheezing breath and spat it out as a blood-curdling roar. He was not done with the maze. He ignored the faces pleading for mercy. He passed by the slaughter of innocents without care.
Blood!
Howled Angron.
Blood and skulls!
The black sword sliced. A mirror burst. The face within screamed. Blood spattered the Primarch, followed by a burst of tinkling clockwork. Perturabo had put all his artistry into the creation of the maze. It was lost on Angron.
Blood!
He roared.
Skulls!
Furious at his captivity, he was reduced to a vocabulary of two words. A fist, the skinned knuckles shockingly white against his red skin, caved in another mirror artwork, crushing the weeping mortal trapped inside.
Skulls!
He howled. The black sword fell, umbral flames roaring along the killing edges. It melted as much as cut through the next mirror. Arcane energy fields exploded with a crisp bang. Powdered glass burst everywhere. Angron was in the thick of slaughter, and there alone could he find a scintilla of peace. As he smashed apart the machines and the beings within, his fury blotted out all thought, removing the troublesome weight of sentience. He did not stop to contemplate whether the people were real, and if so, how they had come to be trapped. He was as unaware as an earthquake, and as destructive. He battered his way through every mirror, silencing the screams, then smashed in the door at the end of the chamber with three blows that dented it and sent it clattering over the floor of the next room. Flashing lights lit figures juddering into life. Dragging footsteps approached Angron. Bladed fists whirred. Mindless voices moaned. Each one was a salamander of Vulcan's legion, their bodies violated by cruel cybernetics. Insanity blazed from their red Nocturnian eyes. Hints of sentience lurked there. More torments for their father. But Angron did not notice, nor would he have cared. He saw skulls and blood for the harvest, and charged without thought. They cut him. Black blood ran from his wounds and fizzed on the deck as it dissipated, taking his essence back to the warp. Buzzsaws and power shears gouged at him. The enslaved space marines could harm him. They could kill him. He would not stop fighting until he was hacked apart. A cut nearly chopped his wing from his back. With his sword gripped in both hands, he spun around in a deadly circle, wrecking every slave cyborg within reach. Yet still there were more. They stopped moving. The lights went out, and he didn't notice, hacking at the salamanders until most were rent into slivers of metal. He was still battering away at the floor, shouting, "Blood! Blood! Blood!" The last was slashed to bits, its flesh mashed to red pulp and its mechanisms broken. Angron snuffled in confusion into the dark. Something had changed. A door opened. He turned. No more tricks or foes. An empty corridor. His rage ebbed. His mind cleared. He had wandered the maze for hours, fighting and destroying, only to be brought back every time to the central chamber, no matter which route he took. Far off a klaxon blared, and the maze shook with the movement of heavy machinery. A breeze tugged at Angron's legs.
Freedom, he grunted. Blood.
The breeze grew into a raging torrent of air, sucking at him. Door after door opened, drawing him through inactive rooms outwards, until the air howled, and he came to the end of the labyrinth, and passed out through vast, patched adamantine doors into a cavernous hold. The maze filled most of the space, the iron mask of Perturabo stamped regularly along the exterior. Angron barely comprehended it, but followed the gale, turned a corner, and was presented with the sight of giant loading doors open to the void. He ran to them, and stood upon the lip of the hold, buffeted by the gale. Terror was before him, its tortured atmosphere flashing and roiling, its orbits shoaling with 100,000 ships. From them fell drops of fire. Angron's last remaining shreds of humanity dimly recognized a drop assault of a magnitude that dwarfed any unleashed during the Great Crusade. The wind died to nothing. Angron stood unharmed in open space. A little of his mind returned. He saw the white and blue ships of his own legion shoot out their landing craft. Sol rose around the globe, spreading its wide beam of golden light over Horus's fleet and silhouetting the vengeful spirit.
Horus! Horus!
He shouted. Against the laws of nature, his voice was heard in the vacuum.
Give me my due!
With that, He spread his wings and leapt into the void. Himalayan airspace, 15th of Quartus. Dropping at several hundred kilometers an hour into the most dangerous war zone in history, Lycoriphus of the Night Lords was preoccupied with one thing, and that was that his feet hurt. He lifted up his right boot for the fifth time and stared at it. The vox clicked.
"What are you doing?"
asked Tashane. Lycoriphus put his foot down.
"My foot hurts," he said.
"See an apothecary then,"
Tashane said disdainfully. He could have added that Lycoriphus shouldn't need to see one, that his foot shouldn't hurt. He was a legionary, and beyond the petty aches that plagued unmodified humanity. Lycoriphus could equally have responded that he'd already consulted with their company Medicaid staff, but then he would have to tell Tashane that his foot was not as it should be. He had been to Estus, because he could trust him. When so many apothecaries abandoned their role or turned from healing to torture, Estus still did his job properly. Many standards had slipped in the Night Lords, but Estus could still be relied on. In his notes were annotated scans of Lycoriphus's feet, arrows picking out metatarsals in the process of fusion, the calcaneus atrophying, phalanges lengthening, and smaller bones dissolving altogether. "A malfunction of the osmodular," Estus had said, somewhat uncertainly, marking his comments down in a book of meticulous records. "There is not much I can do. I'm busy with the wounded. I do not have time for your problem." He had given Lycoriphus a stabilizing compound to add to his suit pharmacopoeia. It had not helped. That was weeks ago. Lycoriphus's foot had changed further since then. He was too canny to go back. The Night Lords were degenerating, but they still had only contempt for mutants. The Thunderhawk bounced through a storm of turbulence. There was not a still pocket of air in all of Terra's atmosphere. Crosswinds and pressure changes were violent enough to tear gunships from the sky and dash them on the ground without any help from the loyalist guns. But though the Night Lords had a reputation for cowardice, it was undeserved. They were space marines. They knew no fear. Lycoriphus didn't want to die, not one bit, but he did not fear death. The very idea of being afraid was slightly absurd. His disregard for danger was not down to conditioning or bravery, but because of one simple fact. Lycoriphus knew he was going to live forever. He felt it to his core. So as the ship bounced and screamed through the dried-up valleys of Himalaya, out of sight of the palace wall guns, but on a collision course with them, Lycoriphus stared at his feet. The lengthened toes of the right curled uncomfortably against his boot. He had no heel to speak of on that foot anymore. A backwards-facing digit, tipped with a claw, was growing in its place. He could no longer deny it. His right foot had become the image of a bird's talon. The left foot was not far behind. Their confinement in boots, made for human feet, was the source of his discomfort. He had wondered if he could find an armourer willing to make him new boots more fitting to his condition, until he wondered again if he was going to need to. A mark had appeared on his right boot recently, an indentation in the ceramite that would not polish out, and no matter how many times he filled and sanded it, grew deeper. The boots were hot with some machine fever, as though they were changing to fit his new form. He looked around the shaking crew compartment. He was not alone in his change. The raptors seemed like Night Lords, until one looked closer. The helms of some had been refashioned with a distinctly bird-like aspect. Through personal choice, the armour was diverging already from that of the rest of the Legion. But the alterations that armour hid were telling. When on the ground, some of them moved awkwardly, their steps exaggerated into avian hops. Several had strange bird-like twitches and hunched postures, as if the jump packs they wore were folded wings, not jets. Lycoriphus lived for flight. All of them did. Being a raptor was becoming more important to him than being a Night Lord. He looked at his feet again. How would his comrades judge them? He thought how much more useful talons would be to him as a flying being than human feet, how they would allow him to grasp and hold himself fast after a jump. The engine screamed. The Thunderhawk nosed upwards into a rapid ascent. Suddenly the sky around them was full of the bang of explosions and clatter of shrapnel as the ship came under fire. A heavy las cannon beam cut through the front hatch, skewering three of Lycoriphus's brethren on a shaft of light, leaving them dangling in their restraints when it snapped off. Another hit moments later, smashing the left engine. The ship dipped, its wounded jet coughing, and lost height. The ready lights switched from red to green, bringing a little more illumination to the dingy interior through the smoke rising from the dead. The damaged front ramp flapped open, the extra drag pulling the gunship faster towards destruction. The rear ramp followed, with more mechanical discipline. The side doors ratcheted wide. Fire flashed on every side as the Emperor's slaves tried to bring them down. Lycoriphus stood first. He drew his weapons as he walked down the aisle to the prow, trying to suppress his growing limp. His armor whined at his awkward movements. Sometimes he thought it would be more comfortable to run on all fours.
"Brothers," he voxed his command, "we fly. First to the wall, first to the blood. Ave Dominus Noctem."
The others were rising as Lycoriphus ignited his jets, ran from the prow, and leapt into the maelstrom of fire. 30 raptors followed him, bright comets of exhaust joining the flare and flash of war. Its task completed, the gunship rolled in the sky and fell, fatally wounded. Smoke chased it to the ground, where it died in orange flames. Lycoriphus's heart pounded with the thrill of flight. Bloody rain splashed from his warplate. A billion people were trying to kill him during that glorious fall. The wall rushed at him, a giant's hand to swat a fly. He fired his jets to slow himself, passing through the failing Aegis with a searing crackle of energy that shorted out half his suit's systems and left the smell of burnt circuitry in his nostrils. The wall grew from a black slab to a layered stack of defences manned by tiny figures in yellow and red. Behind them rose the palace spires, daunting in their height, and the inconceivably huge whale ridge of the Eternity Wall spaceport. The figures saw him and fired. Smaller humans among the legionaries turned their attention to him. Pintle stubbers streaked tracer fire in his direction. Lasgun beams flickered out their short-lived displays. It seemed he was the one stationary in all that fury, and the bullets and the wall and the world rushed at him, as if he were the offended party, and they attacked without provocation. He was so intoxicated by his flight that he remembered to fire his own gun only moments before impact. 3 rounds, he allowed himself. 2 went wild. The 3rd blew apart a mortal man in a gaudy uniform, whose body flowered with stamen ribs and chest wall petals. The wall punched up to meet him. Lycoriphus altered his course to slam into an Imperial Fist's legionary with force enough to kill. The Emperor's slave flew back so hard he cracked a chunk from a merlon before pitching over into the fire-dazzled twilight and falling from the wall. Lycoriphus was sent spinning off by the impact, slamming into the rockcrete with his jet still burning. The surface was slick with vitae pouring from the heavens, and for a moment he teetered on the brink of the inner crenellations. The chasm of the canyon road dividing city from defences yawned at him. A burst of jets and a painful push from his twisted feet sent him back onto the parapet, where men ran at him. Staggered, he brought up his inactive chainsword to deflect the desperate bayonet jabs of 3 Imperial Army soldiers. They fired their guns as they stabbed, scoring his livery. He punched at them clumsily, breaking their skulls with his fists. Time slowed. His head rang. Imperial Fists were running at him, bolters barking. A macro shell hit the wall 50 meters away, sending out a cloud of fire, flailing bodies and a storm of deadly rubble. Time ran true again. He launched himself up, finger gunning the chainsword trigger. He met the first attacker with a sweep at the torso. The sword's teeth did not bite, skidding off the ceramite with a spray of sparks, but it threw off the legionary's aim, and his bolts burned past Lycoriphus's head, wounding his vision with rocket motor flare. The Night Lord was fast, working on instinct, and finished him with a round through the eye slit that obliterated his helmet and painted Lycoriphus with blood. A second warrior came for him, only to be hit by a howling raptor whose falling kick was strong enough to shatter ceramite. Night Lords thumped down around him, guns firing, chain weapons growling. A flurry of violence, a popping chorus of bolt explosions, and there were no more of the Emperor's slaves there to oppose them. Lycorophus was on the walls. After all this time, he was on the palace walls. Their attack had taken the defenders by surprise. There were no other of the War Master's forces on the battlement. Only the blue and red of Night Lord's battle plate was visible, both colours close to black in the fire and murk. He looked up at the spires of the Imperial Palace, bathed in light and glorious despite their embattled state. Lycorophus's heart pounded with the scale of his achievement. He raised his arms and shouted at the sky.
Mino Premiesh! Aminos Moraltias!
He cried in Nostraman, the words as liquid as the rain.
We are first on the wall!
He gathered in his warriors and ordered them to secure the landing zone. Scryvok was coming.